Handel's Julius Caesar starts with a surprisingly short overture. It very quickly and efficiently sets the scene, establishes the character of Caesar himself, and merges almost directly into a chorus of people welcoming Caesar. It has long notes that give it some weight and some gravitas, and it also has dotted rhythms that in that time really telegraphed a warlike sensibility. Of course, at the beginning of this opera, Caesar has just prevailed in battle against Pompey, and he's welcomed ashore in Egypt. After the short overture and chorus, we go directly into Caesar's first aria, and the picture is complete as the title character establishes himself very, very quickly. Handel gives him music that immediately telegraphs confidence and power. The first few notes he sings are very separated from one another on the scale. And then he goes into his first coloratura. It's all the fast notes that are run together. And there's a sense of grace that comes from this, in which we know immediately that this is a strong man, but this is a humane man. After this first unbroken string of overture, chorus, and Caesar's first entrance aria, there comes what we call recitative, and basically it's the conversational part of the opera. And a lot of information is given in this verse of recitative. We find out most notably that even though Caesar pardoned his opponent's life, the king of Egypt, Ptolemaio, has seen fit to behead that same opponent, and he thinks it's going to win Caesar's favor. Of course, when Caesar finds out about this, he's extraordinarily angry and launches immediately into his second aria, directed toward King Ptolemaio, and is an aural manifestation of anger, of rage. When he sings the word crudeltà, cruelty, and on the last syllable of crudeltà, there again is this coloratura that Handel uses to telegraph this anger, this rage that is literally boiling over. The man whom Caesar defeated in battle before the opera began, the same man that was beheaded by the king of Egypt, his name was Pompey. And waiting for him there in Egypt is his wife, her name is Cornelia, and his son, his name is Sesto. We next hear from Cornelia, and it's an aria that is her public response to the fact that her husband is dead. It's a bit of a contradiction because it's set in a major key. It's not set in a stereotypically sad minor key. She sings about the fact that she's been deprived of all consolation, all comfort in her life. But oddly enough, there is comfort in this music. After we hear from Pompey's widow, Cornelia, we then hear from his son, Sesto. Sesto, in his first aria, is summoning up the courage to get the revenge he knows he is due for the death of his father. There is anger in this aria, but there's also almost some teenage adrenaline. Sesto is a young man. He's played in the opera, actually, by a woman who sings the role of a young man and sings it up in the treble range. Now, the way a lot of these arias are structured in this opera, they're what they're called da capo arias. Da capo means going back to the beginning, and literally what you do is you sing the first part, and then there's a contrasting part in the middle. It's called the B section, and then you go back to the beginning, to the A section. And what happens with this aria of Sesto's, Svegliatevi, is that he begins in this very adrenaline-filled rush of summoning up the courage to avenge his father's death, and then the brakes are put on right in the middle of the song, and there's this very, fairly short, reflective B section in which he knows what he's up against and asks for help from his now departed father. After this first scene, we shift to hear for the first time from Cleopatra. Her first aria is actually directed toward her brother. Her brother, Ptolemeo, is king of Egypt. He's the very same man who ostensibly has ordered the beheading of Pompey. And she reigns with him. He's a young, petulant man. And Cleopatra is determined to steal power from him. This is a sibling relationship. This is a power relationship. This is a song from a haughty older sister who is teasing her brother. Not surprisingly, after being taunted by his sister, Ptolemeo sings his first aria, and it is one of anger. It's interesting, though, to compare this. If you remember just a few minutes ago, we talked about Cesare's first anger aria when he learned that Pompey had been beheaded. This is similar in some ways, but in Handel's expert hands, different in other significant ways. This rage aria is somehow more desperate, more ostentatious, more showy, somehow with less integrity. Next, we hear again from Julius Caesar, this time in a more private way than in his first couple arias. This is what's called an accompanied recitative. The big difference here is that it's neither that conversational recitative, that quick information delivery, nor is it an aria. It involves the full orchestra, but it is much more of a monologue. It's very introspective. Handel, and even Mozart after him, used this device really for people who, people of nobility, for people who had some gravitas and had some power. This accompanied recitative is in a really unusual key for Handel, G-sharp minor, so it has a slightly exotic color to it. It's full of repose and confidence and intimacy, and it's very ruminative. It's actually more powerful because it's a monologue, and there's sort of no presentational quality to this. He's singing this for himself and not for public reasons. Caesar's private moment is interrupted by his first meeting with Cleopatra. He doesn't know who she is. She lies to him. She tells him that she is a servant, actually, one of Cleopatra's handmaidens, and her name is Lydia. She sings this very, very flirtatious song without a lot of true feeling in it, but there is this intersection of female flirtation and beauty with power, and the power she hopes to gain over him, and the power she already knows that she enjoys. Oh, when Cleopatra leaves Caesar, she happens to hear an exchange between Cornelia and Sesto, the widow and the son of the beheaded Pompey, who are trying to find a way to get to the king so that Sesto might have a chance to have his revenge. Cleopatra says that she will take them there. They don't know who she is, but she offers to help, and for the first time, Sesto has some hope. Actually, not very much of this opera is about politics and war in the way we think of Julius Caesar. There's a lot of sexual politics, but not too many civics lessons. In one little exchange, though, there's a bit of sparring between Caesar and King Ptolemaio. Caesar has come to Ptolemaio's palace. He has been welcomed in a very quick, polite, but charged conversation between these two men. And after Ptolemaio leaves, Cesare sings what is probably his most famous aria, and it's this musical representation of caginess and the hunt, and it literally, there's a horn that plays very predominantly in this, and it was the signifier of the hunter after his prey. And there's a bit of a look inside Caesar's mind here, and the politics of war and the way in which he is actually going to enjoy taking Ptolemaio down. Pompey's widow, Cornelia, spends much of this opera grieving for her husband, but she actually has other challenges in the sense that many of the men in Ptolemaio's palace in Egypt desire her for themselves. Curio, who is Julius Caesar's right-hand man, desires Cornelia. And now we find out that Aquila, who is the general who actually beheaded her husband, desires her for himself. General Aquila and King Ptolemaio have imprisoned Cornelia, and crazily enough, he wants her to believe that he loves her. Act One ends with a duet, actually an unusual thing in a Handel opera. The two people that are singing together are Pompey's wife, his widow Cornelia, and his son Sesto. This shows Handel's extraordinary talent at blending two treble voices, a woman and a man in this case, but a mezzo-soprano playing Cornelia and a mezzo-soprano also playing her son. It's more sorrowful than Cornelia's first aria that was public. This is much more private in its nature, and it ends the first act.